Hello and welcome to the Pediatric Critical Care Medicine Audio Abstracts. I'm Dr. Erin Bennett, and on behalf of PCCM, I'm happy to present this audio recording of the research abstracts that appear in this month's issue. Let's get started. Abstract 1 is a featured original research article by Johnson et al., Reconsidering Pediatric Critical Care Sequencing, a Qualitative Exploration of Postgraduate Year 1 PICU Rotations Among Senior Pediatric Residents. Objectives. Most pediatric residency programs introduce PICU rotations in postgraduate year or PGY2, although it is unclear whether this timing best supports trainee skill development. Introduction during PGY1 may pose challenges due to clinical intensity, but could also have benefits in uniquely preparing residents for PGY2 responsibilities and autonomy. To address this question, this study explored the experiences and self-perceived impacts of a PGY1 PICU rotation among senior pediatric residents. Design. A multi-institutional qualitative study was conducted using semi-structured interviews of senior, including PGY2 and PGY3 residents who completed a PGY1 PICU rotation. Stratified purposive sampling was used at both institutional and resident levels. Data were coded using constant comparison and analyzed thematically. Setting: 7 institutions requiring a 4-week PGY1 PICU rotation. Participants: senior pediatric residents at participating institutions. There were no interventions. Measurements and main results. 21 interviews across 7 institutions identified 3 key themes. 1. PGY1s can succeed in the PICU setting when supervisors actively cultivate a learning environment of inclusion, support, and appropriate autonomy. 2. PGY1 PICU rotations can foster self-perceived competence and skills that translate to the PGY2 year. And 3. Participants generally believed the benefits of early PICU exposure outweighed the challenges. Conclusions. PGY1 PICU rotations can fall within the zone of proximal development when the experience includes strong supervisory support. Findings highlighted the importance of psychological safety for optimal learning, suggesting that strengthening psychological safety may enhance the educational experience and outcomes. Further research exploring the impact of PGY1s on team dynamics and patient care and comparing the effects of PGY1 versus PGY2 introduction could guide evidence-based recommendations on the optimal sequencing of PICU rotations for pediatric residents. Abstract 2 is a featured original research article by Smith et al., Adherence to Sedation Protocol Recommendations in Intubated ICU Patients. Objectives. Sedation in critically ill children is a complex challenge. Both inadequate sedation and over-sedation are undesirable and carry consequences. Standardized sedation protocols aim to reduce practice variability, minimize drug exposure, and improve outcomes. Although widely used, adherence to sedation protocols remains poorly studied. We quantified the alignment between sedation protocols and infusion titration practices in a large single-center cohort. Design: retrospective cohort study. Setting: 3 PICUs within a single tertiary care children's hospital. Patients: patients admitted between January 1, 2011 and December 31, 2023 who received mechanical ventilation for greater than 24 hours and at least one sedative infusion. There were no interventions. Measurements and main results. A total of 8,108 patients across 9,670 encounters, representing 172,136 ICU patient days, were included. Adherence to 5 metrics was calculated as the proportion of protocol-defined titration opportunities in which the recommended action was taken. Protocol adherence was consistently low across all ICUs. Infusions were rarely increased when indicated. 92.5% missed with a 95% confidence interval of 92.4% to 92.6%, and were often not decreased when recommended. 95.5% missed with a 95% confidence interval of 95.4% to 95.6%. Increases in infusion dose were premature, IDES not indicated by the protocol, in 54.7% with a 95% confidence interval of 54.3% to 55.2%. Titration opportunities determined by the protocol's defined titration recommendations using the number of as-needed doses varied in frequency across encounters, with a median of 3 increase opportunities and 2.4 decrease opportunities per infusion day. Increase opportunities had an interquartile range of 1.1 to 7.6, and decrease opportunities had an interquartile range of 1.6 to 3.6. only 16.2% with a 95% confidence interval of 15.1 to 17.2% of eligible short-duration infusions were discontinued when recommended. Infusions of greater than 5 days duration were weaned per protocol in 74.5% of opportunities, with a range of 74 to 75.1%. Conclusions. Sedation titration in PICUs frequently deviates from protocol recommendations, leading to missed opportunities for active titration. Given the well-documented risks of prolonged sedation, including neurodevelopmental impact, iatrogenic withdrawal, and delirium, as well as the evidence that protocols diminish sedative exposure, improving adherence to sedation protocols is a key target for quality improvement. Future work should focus on identifying barriers to adherence and developing interventions, such as clinical decision support tools, to enhance compliance with evidence-based sedation management. Abstract 3 is a featured original research article by Cohen et al. Non-emergent neonatal ICU to PICU transfers in the United States, cross-sectional survey of neonatologists and pediatric intensivists. Objective. Our 2023 survey of 81 PICUs in the United States involved in the prevalence of acute rehabilitation for kids in the PICU or Park PICU network showed that most pediatric intensivists believe standardization of the neonatal ICU or NICU to PICU transfer process was beneficial. We now report a 2024 survey of neonatologists at the same hospitals to query institutional practices for NICU to PICU intra-facility transfer and to compare perspectives about practices. Design, cross-sectional survey study carried out in 2024. Setting, internet-based. There were no patients and no interventions. Measurements and main results. Our respondents were from 49 of 75 institutions with a 65% response rate. The majority were from academic centers, 44 of 49, of medium to large-sized NICUs, with a median of 65 beds in an interquartile range of 48 to 90, and PICUs, median of 25 beds with an interquartile range of 20 to 38, with most offering fellowship programs in neonatology, 43 of 49, and pediatric intensive care, 38 of 49. Like the report of responding pediatric intensivists, neonatologists reported a median of 5 with an interquartile range of 2 to 8 annual non-emergent NICU to PICU transfers with infrequent protocolization, 17 of 49 of this transfer process beyond frontline clinician and bedside nursing handoff. A minority of neonatologists consider their NICU to PICU transfer practices were effective for clinicians, 19 of 48, or families, 21 of 48. Neonatologists similarly saw transfer protocolization as important for patient safety in 45 of 48 and the patient family experience in 45 of 48. On comparing respondents from institutions with set transfer protocols versus those from institutions without set protocols, there was greater odds of a transfer being evaluated as effective, with an odds ratio of 3.49 and a 95% confidence interval of 1.01 to 12.05. Conclusions. In 2024, neonatologists corroborated our 2023 Park PICU data about non-emergent intra-facility NICU to PICU transfer. These PICU-NICU data dyads now show that neonatologists strongly support standardizing these transfers and that neonatologists from units with standardized transfer evaluate their processes as having more than threefold greater odds of perceived transfer effectiveness. Thus, there is multidisciplinary support for standardizing NICU to PICU transfer practices. Abstract 4 is a featured original research article by Shepherd et al. Quality of bag mask ventilation for children before intubation, single-center PICU pilot observational study from 2019 to 2022. Objectives: to characterize the quality of bag mask ventilation, or BMV, before tracheal intubation in children in the PICU and to evaluate the association between poor bag mask ventilation quality and adverse airway outcomes. Design: single-center pilot observational study from 2019 to 2022. Setting: large urban quaternary care PICU. Patients: pediatric patients requiring bag mask ventilation before tracheal intubation. There were no interventions. Measurements and main results. Using a respiratory function monitor, we collected flow and pressure data from 8,446 bag mask ventilation breaths before tracheal intubation in 85 children in the PICU with a median age of 3.3 years and an interquartile range of 1.4 to 8.3 years. adverse airway outcomes, IDEST tracheal intubation associated event, and or pulse oximetry desaturation less than 80% occurred in 14 of 85 patients, or 16.5%. Low-quality bag mask ventilation breaths were defined as the following. 1. Inadequate or excessive exhaled tidal volumes, defined as exhaled tidal volume less than 4 or greater than 12 milliliters per kilogram. 2. Excessive peak inspiratory pressure, or PIP, and excessive exhaled tidal volume. 3. Excessive face mask leak, greater than 40%. Or 4. Failure to relieve upper airway obstruction. Overall, 78% of bag mask ventilation breaths met at least one low-quality criterion, most frequently inadequate or excessive exhaled tidal volume in 55.5%, followed by excessive leak in 46.2%. Infants less than 1 year and young children 1 to 7 years, compared with older children, had a higher proportion of low-quality bag mask ventilation breaths overall, with inadequate or excessive exhaled tidal volume, excessive leak, and excessive PIP with excessive exhaled tidal volume. After controlling for respiratory pathology, low-quality bag mask ventilation was associated with 2.8 times greater odds of adverse airway outcome, with an adjusted odds ratio of 2.8, a 95% confidence interval of 1.2 to 6.2, and a p-value equal to 0.01. Conclusions. The majority of bag mask ventilation breaths delivered to children before tracheal intubation in the PICU were of low quality, and such breaths were more frequent in younger children and were associated with greater odds of adverse airway outcomes. Abstract 5 is a clinical investigation article by Martin et al., a large language model approach to functional status scale assessment. Objectives: to develop a fine-tuned version of the Generative Pre-trained Transformer, or GPT-4.0 artificial intelligence, or AI, model able to estimate functional status scale scores among critically ill children. Design: secondary analysis of a prospective observational cohort of critically ill children 1 month to 18 years old who required invasive mechanical ventilation for greater than or equal to 3 days. 4 patient notes from each of 3 hospitalization time points: baseline, including history and physical, PICU transfer, and hospital discharge, along with retrospectively assigned functional status scale scores, were used to train the model. The resulting custom GPT, hereafter Functional Status Scale, or FSS AI, was then applied to the remaining 428 notes. The GPT-generated FSS scores were then compared with the manually assigned scores determined prospectively during the original study. Setting: a single quaternary care academic pediatric hospital. Patients: children who completed the original study, survived to discharge, and had FSS scores documented. There were no interventions. Measurements and main results. FSS AI analyzed 428 notes from 147 patients over 255 minutes, averaging 35.7 seconds per note. FSS AI demonstrated moderate agreement with manually determined total FSS scores at the pre-illness baseline and hospital discharge time points, with slightly lower agreement at PICU transfer. The weighted Cohen's kappa at pre-illness baseline was 0.59, with a 95% confidence interval of 0.49 to 0.7. The weighted Cohen's kappa at the hospital discharge was 0.51, with a 95% confidence interval of 0.43 to 0.58. And the weighted Cohen's kappa at PICU transfer was 0.45, with a 95% confidence interval of 0.37 to 0.54. For discrimination of normal total FSS scores, 6 to 7, from abnormal scores, greater than or equal to 8, FSS AI accuracy and positive predictive value were highest at the pre-illness baseline, 0.9 and 0.95 respectively, and hospital discharge, 0.81 to 0.75 time points. FSS AI identified children with a new morbidity at hospital discharge, total FSS increase greater than or equal to 3, or domain FSS increase greater than or equal to 2, with accuracy and sensitivity of 0.75 and 0.56. Conclusions: a custom version of GPT-4.0 was able to estimate FSS scores at multiple hospitalization time points. The tool demonstrated moderate agreement with manually determined scores, could discriminate children with normal versus abnormal FSS, including best performance at baseline and hospital discharge time points, and had fair accuracy for detecting new morbidities present at hospital discharge. Abstract 6 is a clinical investigation article by Feeder et al. Associations with prolonged post-extubation non-invasive respiratory support in neonates following the Norwood procedure, a two-center retrospective cohort study from 2019 to 2023. Objective: the use of post-extubation respiratory support in single ventricle neonates undergoing the Norwood procedure is poorly described. We investigated the patterns of respiratory support following extubation as well as factors associated with prolonged exposure to post-extubation non-invasive respiratory support defined as greater than or equal to 72 hours in neonates recovering from the Norwood procedure. Design: two-center retrospective cohort study. Setting: North American pediatric cardiac ICUs. Patients: neonates less than 1 month at the time of surgery undergoing a Norwood procedure between January 1, 2019 and December 31, 2023. There were no interventions. Measurements and main results. The study included 127 neonates, of whom 60 or 47% experienced the primary outcome of prolonged non-invasive respiratory support. In multivariable analysis, the presence of an airway anomaly, an unplanned surgical or catheter-based re-intervention, and longer postoperative mechanical ventilation were independently associated with prolonged non-invasive respiratory support. The adjusted odds ratio for airway anomaly was 3.6 with a 95% confidence interval of 1.4 to 8.9 and a p-value equal to 0.006. The adjusted odds ratio for unplanned surgical or catheter-based reintervention was 3.2 with a 95% confidence interval of 1.3 to 7.5 and a p-value equal to 0.01. And the adjusted odds ratio for longer postoperative mechanical ventilation was 1.1 with a 95% confidence interval of 1 to 1.2 and a p-value equal to 0.018. Patients with prolonged non-invasive respiratory support had lower weight for age Z-score at cardiac ICU discharge, negative 2.11 versus negative 1.14, with a p-value equal to 0.004, longer CICU length of stay, 25.1 versus 11.1 days, and a p-value less than 0.001, and longer postoperative sedative exposure, 59.8 versus 16.8 days, with a p-value less than 0.001. Abstract 7 is a clinical investigation article by Strauer et al. Bolus epinephrine dose readiness for cardiac arrest prevention in pediatric cardiac ICUs, 2024 survey of units in the United States. Objective: to describe current practice in pediatric cardiac ICUs or CICUs regarding use of bolus epinephrine in pre-arrest clinical scenarios, focusing on epinephrine dose readiness, meaning having emergency medications available at a patient's bedside. Setting: academic and clinical CICUs in the United States. Design: cross-sectional survey of medical directors from August to October 2024. There were no interventions. Measurements and main results. 48 of 71 medical directors, or 68%, responded to the survey request. Of the respondents, 41 of 48 reported the practice of having bolus doses of epinephrine ready at patients' bedsides. In 36 of 41 units, epinephrine doses were drawn up for high-risk patients only, whereas the other 5 of 41 units reported placing bolus doses of epinephrine at the bedside for all CICU patients regardless of risk. Of these 5 units with bedside epinephrine for all patients, 4 units reported that this was done throughout the entirety of CICU admission. Most CICUs, 33 of 41, with bedside epinephrine reported having patient-specific doses ready at bedside, whereas the other, 8 of 41 CICUs with bedside epinephrine said that they had pre-filled epinephrine syringes that were not patient-specific. Regarding the dose of epinephrine boluses, 27 of 48 units reported having 1 microgram per kilogram doses ready, which included 14 of 48 units that reported having both 10 microgram per kilogram or cardiac arrest dose and 1 microgram per kilogram doses of epinephrine ready. On stratifying responses by CICU size, greater than 20 beds versus those less than or equal to 20 beds, we identified a greater proportion reporting epinephrine dose readiness for all patients throughout their CICU stay, 31.6% versus 4.8%, and a p-value equal to 0.025. Conclusions: in 48 U.S. CICUs in 2024, medical directors reported a range of practices in epinephrine dose readiness for anticipation of patient clinical deterioration. Our findings expose a lack of standardization in practice, and there is a need to establish best practices with more research. Abstract 8 is a clinical investigation article by Rickner et al. Palliative Care and Decision for Terminal Cardiopulmonary Resuscitation in the PICU, Single Center Retrospective Mixed Methods Analysis from 2013 to 2022. Objectives: to quantify the prevalence of cardiopulmonary resuscitation, or CPR, in the final 24 hours of life, or terminal CPR, and characterize the decision to forego terminal CPR. Design: retrospective mixed methods data sets. Setting: PICU in a United States Midwestern Quaternary Regional pediatrics-only healthcare system. Patients: all children and adolescents aged less than or equal to 26 years who died in the PICU from 2013 to 2022. There were no interventions. Measurements and main results. Out of 23,434 admissions, there were 316 deaths, 1.35%, consistent with the national PICU reference. In our population, 74% of deaths occurred with one or more end-of-life events, IDEST limitation or non-escalation of life-sustaining therapies, discontinuation of non-beneficial life-sustaining therapies, and altered code status, 9% greater than the national reference, or 65%, with a p-value equal to 0.001. Out of 234 deaths occurring after 24 hours of admission, terminal CPR occurred in 18, or 8%. Pre-admission pediatric palliative care consultation occurred in 80 of 234 cases, or 34%, and the factors associated with this involvement included baseline disability, non-trauma designation, primary admission diagnosis, home medical equipment, not meeting death by neurologic criteria, and sex. Baseline disability was assessed using pediatric overall performance category plus pediatric cerebral performance category. In a classification tree analysis, pre-admission pediatric palliative care exposure was the strongest contributor of the terminal CPR-related factors. Further thematic qualitative analysis of provider progress notes in 19 cases identified elements specific to the process of deciding to forego terminal CPR. Conclusions: our 10-year retrospective analysis of children dying in the PICU after 24 hours of admission identified pre-admission pediatric palliative care exposure as a key factor associated with a reduced proportion of terminal CPR occurrence. The additional qualitative analysis of those choosing to forego terminal CPR showed that these families experienced end-of-life care through a temporally and emotionally dynamic decision-making process. Abstract 9 is a clinical investigation article by Lee et al. Association of Albumin Infusion with Differential Response in Pediatric Sepsis and Septic Shock, Retrospective Analysis Using a U.S. Multicenter 2012 to 2018 Dataset. Objective: the study goal was to evaluate the outcomes associated with albumin use in children with sepsis and shock compared with those without shock using causal inference analysis in a multicenter cohort. Design, setting, and patients. This was a secondary analysis of electronic health record data collected from 13 U.S. PICUs between 2012 and 2018, consisting of children younger than 18 years who met Phoenix sepsis criteria within the first 24 hours of PICU admission. Interventions: covariate balancing propensity score weighting was applied to adjust for indication bias in the albumin use. Patients receiving at least 0.5 grams per kilogram of albumin within 24 hours of PICU admission were assigned to the albumin group, others to the control. Only 24-hour survivors were included to address immortal time bias. Measurements and main results. Overall, 17,307 children with sepsis survived at least 24 hours. Of these, 1,344 patients, or 7.8%, who received albumin within the first 24 hours, and 9,678, or 55.9%, met the criteria for septic shock. A significant interaction between albumin use and shock status was observed, with an interaction of negative 0.353 and a p-value equal to 0.007, with albumin administration in pediatric septic shock patients associated with a lower in-hospital mortality, with an odds ratio equal to 0.698 and a 95% confidence interval of 0.629 to 0.774, risk ratio equal to 0.746 with a 95% confidence interval of 0.625 to 0.891, and hazard ratio equal to 0.688 with a 95% confidence interval of 0.558 to 0.848. In contrast, there was no difference in outcomes between the albumin and control groups in the non-shock group. Conclusions. Early albumin administration was associated with improved outcomes in children with septic shock, but not in those without shock. These results highlight the importance of considering clinical heterogeneity, such as the presence of shock, in identifying treatment-responsive subgroups and enabling more targeted interventions in pediatric sepsis. Further prospective validation is warranted. Abstract 10 is a clinical investigation article by Gaifilia et al. Distinct blood and lung proteins drive pulmonary capillary leak in children with severe hypoxemic respiratory failure. Objectives. Acute hypoxemic respiratory failure is a leading cause of death and disability in critically ill children. Pulmonary capillary barrier dysfunction in large part drives severity. We aim to define how blood and tracheobronchial lavage fluid differentially affect pulmonary capillary barrier function and, as a second exploratory aim, identify protein mediators. Design. We performed a secondary analysis in April and May of 2024 of blood and tracheobronchial lavage samples from a previously completed observational cohort study of mechanically ventilated children collected from October 2018 to February 2020. Setting, single PICU. Subjects, stored blood and tracheobronchial lavage samples from 65 children requiring mechanical ventilation collected at 24 and 48 to 72 hours after intubation. There were no interventions. Measurements and main results. We quantified inflammatory proteins in plasma and tracheobronchial lavage using Olink Target 48 cytokine multiplex. We assessed changes in barrier function of cultured human pulmonary microvascular endothelial cells using electrical cell substrate impedance to measure transendothelial electrical resistance. Plasma samples from critically ill children significantly enhanced human pulmonary microvascular endothelial cell barrier function and contained a lower concentration of protein inflammatory cytokines compared with tracheobronchial lavage. Over time, the effects of plasma on barrier integrity diminished, while tracheobronchial lavage samples significantly improved barrier function and had reduced abundance of severe pro-inflammatory cytokines. Notably, tracheobronchial lavage samples from children with severe lung injury augmented human pulmonary microvascular endothelial cell barriers more than those from children without lung injury, highlighting distinct compartmental and disease-specific influences on human pulmonary microvascular endothelial cell barriers. Conclusions. These unexpected findings reveal that blood and lung compartments contain differentially abundant proteins that exert distinct and evolving influences on pulmonary endothelial integrity in critically ill children. These results may inform on the timing and compartment-specific assessment of biomarkers and eventually delivery of therapies. Abstract 11 is a clinical investigation article by Baker et al. PICU strain and its association with patient outcomes. Objectives. To measure PICU strain and test for associations between strain and patient outcomes. We hypothesized that patients transferred from the PICU during high compared with low strain periods would be more likely to experience an unplanned PICU readmission within 48 hours. Design, retrospective cohort study. Setting, 32 PICUs in the Virtual Pediatric Systems LLC database. Study population, patients transferred from the PICU between September 1, 2014 and March 31, 2023. There were no interventions. Measurements and main results. We characterized volume-based strain metrics daily, including census, defined as number of PICU patients, and turnover, defined as number of PICU admissions, transfers, or discharges. To account for fluctuations in bed availability and staffing, we identified the days with the highest 95th percentile census and turnover for each quarter and each PICU. We used generalized linear mixed models to test for an association between being transferred from the PICU during days with the highest census and turnover, 95th percentile, and experiencing an early unplanned PICU readmission. After adjusting for patient-level confounders and correlation among PICUs, we identified that patients transferred on days when turnover was in the 95th percentile were more likely to experience an early unplanned PICU readmission, with an odds ratio of 1.23 and a 95% confidence interval of 1.14 to 1.33, compared with those transferred on days when turnover was less than 95th percentile. Being transferred on a day during which the census was in the 95th percentile was not associated with experiencing an early unplanned readmission. Conclusions. This multi-center PICU study demonstrated that turnover is a valuable PICU strain metric that should be used to inform clinical operations and staffing decisions to optimize patient outcomes. Abstract 12 is a PCCM trial by Orzel et al. Protocol for a randomized clinical trial to evaluate not routinely measuring gastric residual volume to guide enteral feeding versus routine measurement in mechanically ventilated critically ill children, or gastric PICU. Objective: providing adequate nutrition is a key aspect of pediatric intensive care, with enteral administration preferred. The regular measurement of gastric residual volume to guide feeding is common, but it results in frequent feed interruptions due to a perceived high gastric residual volume. The gastric PICU, or using gastric residual volume to guide enteral feeding versus routine measurement in mechanically ventilated critically ill children, randomized control trial aims to evaluate the clinical and cost effectiveness of not routinely measuring gastric residual volumes to guide enteral feeding compared with the usual practice of routine measurement. Design: multicenter randomized non-inferiority open-label clinical trial with embedded health economic evaluation. Setting: 23 PICUs across United Kingdom, Scotland, Northern Ireland, and Switzerland. Patients: infants and children 37 weeks old or older, corrected gestational age to 16 years, admitted to participating PICUs on mechanical ventilation and being enterally fed. Intervention and comparison: standard feeding protocols without routinely measuring gastric residual volume to guide feeding will be compared against standard feeding protocols with routine, at least 6-hourly gastric residual volume measurement to guide feeding. Measurements and main results: randomization 1-to-1 between no routine gastric residual volume measurement and routine gastric residual volume measurement stratified by site, age at admission, and main reason for admission. Research without prior consent will be used. The primary clinical outcome is a composite outcome of survival and days free from mechanical ventilation at 30 days, non-inferiority. The superiority co-primary outcome is the percentage of the child's estimated energy requirements achieved by 72 hours after randomization. The primary outcome of cost-effectiveness analysis is incremental net monetary benefits at 6 months. Baseline demographics and clinical status, daily nutritional data for the first 7 days, and discharge outcome, as well as long-term survival and economic data, will be collected. Conclusions: trial findings will be disseminated in peer-reviewed journals, via international conferences, and in lay language via social media. Abstract 12 is a PCCM trial by Matke et al. Sweep gas nitric oxide during extracorporeal membrane oxygenation in neonates and children, or the NECTAR trial, a single-center pilot randomized control trial. Objectives: to test the feasibility and safety of a randomized control trial, or RCT, delivering nitric oxide into the sweep gas or sweep nitric oxide of extracorporeal membrane oxygenation, or ECMO, circuits in critically ill children. Second, we explored whether use of sweep nitric oxide may influence clinical outcomes. Design: prospective, pilot, single-center, open-label, randomized control trial. Setting: single-center, tertiary PICU with enrollment between July 2020 and July 2023. Patients: patients from birth to 16 years requiring veno-arterial or veno-venous ECMO support were enrolled. Interventions: randomization to sweep flow with an oxygen to nitrogen mix versus a mix of oxygen, nitrogen, and sweep nitric oxide at 20 parts per million. Randomization was stratified by type of ECMO support, veno-arterial versus veno-venous. Measurements and main results: of 60 eligible patients, 53 underwent randomization. The median was 1 month and 6.2 months for the intervention and control arms, respectively. The intervention interquartile range was 0.1 to 33.5 months, and the control interquartile range was 0.5 to 120.2 months. Veno-arterial and veno-venous support were used in 35 of 53 or 65% and 18 of 53 or 35% of patients, respectively. In all, 17 of 53 or 32% received pulmonary, 23 of 53 or 43% cardiac, and 13 of 53 or 25% extracorporeal cardiopulmonary resuscitation support. Median survival free of ECMO and survival free of PICU censored at 30 and 90 days were similar. 18.2 days with an interquartile range of 0 to 25.2 days and 69.1 days with an interquartile range of 0 to 85.2 days versus 20.8 days with an interquartile range of 0 to 26.3 days and 77.7 days with an interquartile range of 0 to 85.9 days with an effect estimate of negative 3.2 days with an interquartile range of negative 16.6 to 10.1 days and negative 8.8 days with an interquartile range of negative 54.2 to 36.6 days between the intervention and standard care arm. Blood product use, circuit duration to replacement, free plasma hemoglobin, degree of oxygenator thrombus, and incidence of methemoglobinemia were similar between the two groups. No major adverse events occurred related to the treatment allocation or intervention. Conclusions. This single-center pilot randomized control trial of sweep nitric oxide versus standard sweep flow in the ECMO circuit demonstrated that such a trial is safe and feasible. However, given no effect of sweep nitric oxide on clinical outcomes was detected, further exploration of dose and route of administration of nitric oxide should be undertaken before larger definitive trials are conducted. This concludes the abstracts for the May 2026 issue of Pediatric Critical Care Medicine. Thank you very much for listening. For more journal-related content, including access to the articles mentioned in this recording, please visit pccmjournal.org. Members of the SCCM Pediatric Section receive complimentary access to the PCCM Journal.